please come into my room.
Welcome back to the Mustache Room. I'm your host, David Benn. On this episode, Molly enters the Mustache Room. She's an expert in psychedelic-assisted therapy and the same person that helped me with my most recent experience. Great conversation. We also get a visit from Jill. She tells us all about the Mishima mushroom and how we're using obscure songs about our cat to sing to our unborn daughter. Yeah. I also introduce a new segment where I talk to my hilariously cynical sister, Abby Kneeser, about random bullshit. And finally, I want to acknowledge we lost my bubby, my grandmother, this past week. She was 97 years old and one of the last remaining Holocaust survivors, Auschwitz specifically. And she dedicated her post-Holocaust life to educating any and everyone about one of humanity's lowest points. And so there are two ways that I cope with loss. One way is humor, which you'll hear with my conversation with my sister, and the other is poetry. I know, polar opposites. But I wrote this poem to remember and to pay homage to my bubby. You know, every once in a while, I like to grab my favorite quill pen, some parchment paper, draw from my years of calligraphy experience, and write down some thoughts. Then I transfer it to something digital because paper is wasteful and stupid, and read them to you guys. You're welcome.
Listen to the poem I just wrote.
Confirm my feelings. Confirm my feelings.
My mind to remind. Win or learn, but I will not lose it. Often in search, but never lost. I preserve my mind to remind. Reduce my body to a vessel, but I still mind. Immune to sail or seizure, I preserve my mind to remind. Impenetrable to the sword or the poisonous spoken word, I preserve my mind to remind. Shrink me, orphan me, mute me, incapable of surrender, submitting only to time, I preserve my mind to remind. A stark journal, guarded with lives, to serve the now and next. Our sacrifice demands it be hearkened. I preserve my mind for all to mind, remind. And now my conversation with Molly.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, so I definitely wanted to bring you on because I learned a lot in talking to you when we met during my experience. And I felt like a lot of the stuff that you shared with me and your experience in the field would be really enlightening and just educational for the audience. So I wanted to ask you, when we first spoke, you said that you work with two different substances and you decide based on initial interviews and questions that you decide which route to take. Can you elaborate on that a little bit for the audience?
Sure. So yeah, I work with two different substances, MDMA and psilocybin.
Okay.
And the reason I limit it to those two is that's what I have the most experience with personally. And I don't really want to work with people with substances that I don't have a lot of experience. It doesn't feel comfortable to me.
Makes sense.
So, and there's a number of different factors as to which of those, because it's a collaborative decision, the client and I choose to work with, one being any contraindications. So MDMA tends to have more contraindications than psilocybin. So if a person has a history of cardiovascular issues, that's one contraindication that you have to be really careful with.
You said there's an amphetamine base to the MDMA.
Yeah. Okay. So MDMA is, I don't know how much you want me to go into this, but it is an amphetamine. So it can be speedy. It can increase, it can have a load on your body and in particular your cardiovascular system.
Okay.
You'll hear people say the body load that comes with MDMA. And it's just, you know, there can be muscular contraction, there can be tension, and so people refer to that as a body load. It's a heavy body load.
Yeah, and I remember that I felt really exhausted physically, somatic exhaustion after the experience. So I can relate to that for sure.
Yeah. So that's one contraindication. The other is certain medications you have to be careful of, in particular MAOIs, which are an antidepressant, anti-anxiety medication. You have to also be very careful with SSRIs because it's a serotonin. It interacts with the serotonin system, and that's what MDMA does. So there's contraindications that have to be considered.
And you had mentioned so afterwards you had me taking the 5-HTP to kind of replenish some of the serotonin.
Yeah. So what happens in the body, and this is a layperson's explanation, is the
That's
MDMA
how we like
dumps
it.
serotonin. Yeah. Try to keep it simple. So the MDMA dumps serotonin into the system. That's why it's an empathogen. It's a heart opener. It also actually interacts or increases oxytocin, which is a whole other thing, which I just learned, which is quite interesting. But so there's a serotonin dump, and your body responds to that by saying, oh, I don't need to make any serotonin right now. There's enough in the system. So the body shuts down its own production of serotonin. And that's why some people experience kind of a depressive dip for a few days after, is because the body isn't making the serotonin that it normally does.
Interesting.
On a daily basis. So that's why the 5-HTP is a natural product like St. John's Wort and a few other things that can help help with that serotonin replacement or substitute. So it can help keep the person from dipping.
Very cool.
All testimonial, and as is so much of this work right now, there's obviously a lot of research, but the research is normally done in normal populations. So they're not testing these substances with people that have issues. And so that's why most of the information you get is just based on people's experience.
Sure.
So anyway, contraindications are one consideration. A person's history with non-ordinary states, that could be a number of things. It could be holotropic breath work. It could be psychedelics. It could be, you know, drumming. There's trance dancing. There's ways to induce a non-ordinary state aside from psychedelics. But if someone has absolutely no experience and is coming in with a pretty high level of anxiety or fear, MDMA is a good gateway in to this territory. It's relatively benign, whereas psilocybin, it can take you to a lot of different places, which sometimes can be uncomfortable. So a person's history with non-ordinary states is a factor. And some people just are insistent on a natural product like psilocybin versus a synthetic.
Sure.
And so the decision is a collaborative one. I give them, if I have a certain sort of inclination, I'll let them know that. The other thing is MDMA can be really good for trauma. That's what they're researching. It's amazing. Sort of results they're getting using MDMA to treat PTSD and trauma. So if someone's coming in with that being explicit, that's another thing that would weigh it towards MDMA. And the other thing is relationship issues. Any type of relationship dynamics. If someone's coming in and their intention is to look at or work on a relationship of any, in any context, you know, work context, family, spouse, MDMA can be a really good medicine for that.
Yeah, and so that was during our conversation, that was where you steered me, because, you know, it fell into that umbrella of intimacy and relationship issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the factors, the major ones that I would talk to the person about, and then we would decide which substance to use.
Cool. Now, you'd mentioned some literature like Michael Pollan's book and some other things that you almost considered like prerequisites for entering into that type of experience. For those newbies or the rookies, like, is that like How to Change Your Mind? Would you consider that the Bible for people that are curious about the experience?
Yeah. For someone that has no reference to this work, it's a great big overview. It goes through the history. It's heavy on the history in the beginning. So I just tell people, if they're not engaged with the history, just skip forward. But he does a great job, and he's quite neutral in his writing about this work. He wasn't looking to convince people. He didn't know much about it. So he actually shares some of the research that's happening, some of his own personal experiences, because he does go and find people guiding, like the work that I do, and engages with different medicines. And he also talks to people who have experienced the healing that can come from this medicine. So I think it's just a good umbrella overview. And there's a lot of other resources out there, but that one's kind of an all-inclusive, general, good start.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree. And I endorse it wholeheartedly. So that's very cool. I wanted to ask you about the dosing. So, you know, when people, a lot of people have no idea what dose they're taking when they just casually take MDMA, you know, in a social setting or party setting or whatever. Same with psilocybin. A lot of times people are like, give me a cap and a stem or whatever. What precise dosages do you use to kind of facilitate your experiences?
Well, with MDMA, there's a range. You know, some will say 75% or 75 milligrams would be like a mini dose.
Okay.
You know, you can feel something, but it's kind of on the lighter end. Up to 200 milligrams, which seems to be trending right now. The gold standard, it's always been 125 milligrams for MDMA. So, you know, you can kind of titrate that by, you know, splitting whatever capsule you have. So if you have a 200 milligram capsule, you can dilute it in water and then, you know, start with one dose, say 100 milligrams, and then add and boost it, you know. And that's quite a common practice, is using a booster, so that a person who particularly has never done it, you can start out with a lower dose and boost up, you know, see how they respond, and then boost up. 200 milligrams is considered quite high. Okay. So,
and that's what we had, or that's what you used for me.
Yeah. And if someone's on any type of medication that tends to dampen the affect, you know, there's medications that antidepressants often will kind of dampen the affect. That's how they're supposed to work. People tend to need more who might be on those medications.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's just, that's one consideration around dosage is, okay, what are the factors that are the person's coming in with that might require a higher dose?
And the boosting, that whole process, I'm familiar with that from ayahuasca, because they allowed you to kind of ramp up a little bit and then hit you with the booster and kind of accelerate and maintain that experience. So I'm familiar with that. So with the psilocybin, again, I'm familiar with, you know, my dosages for my Saturday therapy or whatever I'm doing, but what do you use and what do you recommend for those of us that are not familiar with using that every day or whatever?
Well, as you know, David, the strand can, you know, not every mushroom is created equal.
Understood.
So there's some, you kind of have to know what the, quote, the potency is.
Sure.
You know, is it a really strong one or is it quite gentle? So, and you might not know that. So that's one of the reasons to start on a lower starting dose and then boost up. So, but usually I find there's some factors that I collaborate with the person to decide the starting dose. And that's if they have no experience, they have some anxiety coming into it, we tend to go on the lower end of the spectrum. But in general, I'd say the starting dose for psilocybin would be somewhere between 2.5 grams and 4 grams.
Okay. And is that incorporating a booster or is that an initial dose?
That's an initial dose.
Okay.
So, and I just want to say that in working in the way that I work, which is in a healing context, I'm not looking to blast people out into the ethers and hope that they come back whole, which people who have, quote, bad trips, often, you know, there's a lot of factors that can contribute that, but it's just their intention is to just see what happens, you know, take a handful of mushrooms. And that's not how I want to work. I want the person, no matter what medicine I use, to be able to track what's coming through. And with too high a dose, you lose that capacity.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I remember you telling me from my experience that, you know, you're going to help me establish my mindset and create the set, but you're 100% in charge of the setting. And I thought that was really cool how you took away that burden or any anxiety that may stem from not having a comfortable surrounding or, you know, just anything that could compromise the setting. And so I thought that was really nice to kind of share that load. And then by helping me cultivate my mindset, we met in the middle and had a valuable, worthwhile experience.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure we need to go into set and setting, but those are the two major factors in someone's experience, what the mindset is, what they're carrying in internally. And some of the prep calls are attending to that, is to really help the person sort what are they coming in with and how might that influence. And intention is one of those factors. And then the setting, yes. Where are you doing it? Who are you with? How safe does the person feel? And I don't mean, oh my God, my life's in danger. It's your psyche knows when it feels safe. And that's the real, that's what I'm looking to do, is to create as safe a setting as possible for the person. And we kind of collaborate on the setting. Like I usually invite people to bring items, you know, altar items that they want to be present in the field. So there is some sort of collaboration, but for the most part, that's my responsibility.
Yeah. And I've had my most powerful experiences when I have the most comfortable settings. I don't even have to worry about it. And so, if I ever have any tension or anything where I can't get settled, the experience is just not profound at all. So that's almost paramount for me to have that safe setting. So that was really, really valuable.
Yeah. I mean, I'll have people say, this is a really typical question. Have you ever worked with someone that's had a bad trip? And so my first question is, how do you define a bad trip? Because the reality is, if you're working in a healing capacity with these medicines, it's not always comfortable. Some of the things that come up are not, can be disorienting, can be uncomfortable, but there's a trust, if you're working in a healing way, that whatever comes up is meant for you to really look at in the healing process. So, you know, they're like, well, I had a really bad trip, you know, when I was in college. And I usually ask, okay, who were you with? Where were you? And what did you take and how much? And inevitably, their response, it's like, well, that was kind of a setup for a bad trip.
Sure.
You know, I was at a concert. I didn't know many people, you know, or I was at Burning Man and it was my first time doing psychic. And it's like, well, you know, that's kind of a setup. So, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of variables, a lot of unknown variables to compromise your experience.
Yep.
And so as far as duration, my experience, well, why don't you tell us kind of the difference between the MDMA and the psilocybin duration, just to kind of get an idea of how long the therapy takes.
Okay. You know, from ingestion, you know, prior to ingestion, there's about 45 minutes to an hour of preparing the person, reminding them of how the medicine might manifest itself, you know, what they can expect, some of the different things. And not everybody experiences the same thing. But for instance, with psilocybin, there tends to be some nausea.
Okay.
Some people experience. So just letting them know that, giving them ginger chews to try to mitigate that. So there is usually 45 minutes to an hour of prep time. Then the person ingests the medicine. And I used to say MDMA is a shorter acting medicine. I don't say that anymore. Because I've had people, I worked with someone this weekend who didn't want to come out of an MDMA experience. Mm. You know, it was 8 hours in and I kind of had to sort of, you know, just nudge a little bit.
Yeah,
and that's
I have
not
stuff
atypical.
To do.
Yeah, well, no, I don't usually don't have anything to do, but it's like there is this inclination to want to stay there.
Okay.
Especially with MDMA. So you'll hear that MDMA tends to be 4 to 5 hours. Psilocybin tends to be 5 to 6 hours. But in reality, after you work with a number of people, that kind of statistic goes out the window.
Okay.
So, yeah. But I'd say in general, 6 hours, give or take an hour.
Okay. And so you had alluded to it, and I know we discussed the importance of integration and how once the experience is over and you have a chance to kind of come down and settle, the integration is really where the therapy takes place. So how do you approach the integration, and how do you, you know, ensure that there are lasting results with the people that you work with after the experience is over?
Well, first of all, I can't ensure anything.
Well, I guess, how do you try to put your fingerprint on the sustained therapy?
How do I support the process?
Right, there you go.
Well, I try to really emphasize in the preparation phase the importance of integration. You know, there's a way in which, and our culture doesn't really, it's not a great integrative culture. We're kind of go through an experience and we want to be on to the next thing.
Sure.
And not really pause and reflect, what just happened. So I try to really prepare the person to say, for instance, it's not an 8-hour experience. It actually, to try to carve out 4 days is a minimum. So you have 2 days after where you don't have to turn your attention towards anything.
Okay.
And you can really sit with what comes up. Most people, I'm realizing, don't even have a reference for integration. So it's really trying to, and I offer to provide short-term integration. That can vary from person to person depending on their intention and, you know, what comes up. But it could mean, you know, two hour-long calls. And what I'm trying to do is help them make meaning of their experience and tie it back to their intention and really establish a practice or practices that help them to come back to whatever came through in the journey. And, you know, that's when the real work begins, is the integration.
Sure.
And I can't dictate how much a person commits to that. But if someone wants to get the most out of it, you know, establishing a touchstone to come back to the experience on a regular frequency would be ideal, and have some support, you know, therapeutic support, support from others who can help them make meaning. Yeah.
And so with the people that you work with, I remember when I did my ayahuasca experience, all the integration and all the feedback was amazing and profoundly positive. What kind of testimonials are you getting? I mean, like you must be getting life-changing testimonials from the people that you work with. That's gotta be super fulfilling.
Yeah. So one of my first clients, I had done this work with friends, but one of my first clients came to me. She had been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer.
Wow.
And she had been reading about, and there's a lot of research using these medicines to help with end-of-life anxiety.
Yeah.
That's how they phrase it. And so she came with her husband and she had a psilocybin experience. And after that, in the integration process, she said, Molly, I'm not ready to die. I'm just not, but I'm no longer afraid. And that was huge. I mean, I'm kind of getting goosebumps.
Yeah.
And that was that, you know, if you're sitting in that position where death is on your doorstep, to not have any fear is it's quite a profound sort of shift. So that was one example of that.
Wow.
Unfortunately, she ended up passing beautifully from what I understand.
Yeah.
Let me see. I could be on a whole podcast and tell you about testimonials, but
we could defer some of that for the next time, but yeah.
So some people come in with a real underlying level of anxiety. That's kind of typical.
Okay.
That they've lived with forever. And, this experience with the medicine can sometimes be very somatic. It's all about the body, and they'll come out of the experience and they'll report that that's the first time that they felt anxiety free in their body.
That's so
maybe
cool.
Forever. So there's a reference there, and that's where the integration is important. It's like, okay, how can you keep going back to that feeling that your somatic body feeling that you now have a reference for and tap into, and then eventually try to extend that feeling. So that's an example of how integration is really important.
Oh, I love it. I love what you're doing. And, I guess if people are out there and they want to look at maybe getting some psychedelic assisted therapy or learn more about it, other than Michael Pollan, are there any resources that you'd recommend for, you know, just learning more about the whole process?
Oh, God, yeah. And it's only increasing out there. There's Double Blind Magazine, which is a magazine online that offers courses, just introductions to this work. There's the San Francisco Psychedelic Society or Association or Institute. They have all these online courses, and often they're very inexpensive.
Okay.
So they're very educational. And I think that's the most important thing for people to sort of do is become educated about it, you know, and most people might, not most, but a lot of people have done psychedelics, but it's always been in sort of a recreational, outward focused way. So they're engaging with other people, with nature. That has its place and it's all good. But the context or the healing context, it's all internal. So really learning about these things and the way that these medicines can be used in a, you know, for healing purposes. And that's very different for people to sort of be lying down, listening to music with, you know, the invitation is to have eye shades on and just go internal. That's very different than watching the clouds breathe and the trees dance. And
I enjoy it. I enjoy psilocybin in a recreational sense, but by no means am I looking for healing during that process. So yeah, it's not bad in any way. So all those resources you mentioned, also obviously listening to more episodes of the Mustache Room podcast.
Of course.
Molly,
that's a given.
Thank you so much. Molly, thank you so much for being on and educating us. I learn so much every time we talk.
Yeah, no problem.
I'll let you go. I'll let you get back to your busy day, but let's talk soon and great to see your face.
Yeah, you as well, David.
All right, Molly.
Yeah, I'm glad you're getting the word out. So thank you.
It's been awesome. And it's thanks important. For helping.
Okay.
All right, see ya.
Take care.
Bye.
All right.
And now a segment where I chat with my sister Abby about random bullshit. She's a bit cynical, so I refer to her as Abby Kneeser.
D's my sister.
Both form of the same stuff.
I was reading about sitting Shiva, you know, now that Bubby passed. Have you read the Shiva process?
Oh, absolutely. I'm an expert.
You're well-versed. I figured you'd be well-versed in all the Judaism.
I know it in Hebrew and English.
Right. Of course. So for the whole week after the funeral, you don't do shit. So basically, like, you cover up all the mirrors. You're not allowed to wear makeup or shave or do anything that is self-serving. It's purely about mourning the deceased. You're supposed to celebrate the life of that individual and just make it all about them and all of their memories. But depriving yourself of everything, that's a tough compromise.
I don't know. A lot of that just sounds like my life during quarantine.
So you're just just roll right through it. Like, I'm in a Shiva state anyways. I'm already sitting Shiva on the couch.
I don't want to Shiva my legs.
So, yeah, I mean, I love Bubby. I will celebrate Bubby. You know, I definitely want to respect that part of the tradition. But, I mean, it seems like a whole lot of work to deprive myself. And I'm not sure Bubby was narcissistic enough to really want us to do that.
It seems like a whole lot of non-work when you think about it. I'm kind of into it.
You're like, I already have sheets over the mirrors. They're unimportant. Mirrors, schmirrors. Yeah. So I'm not going to be pure. I'm not going to be sitting Shiva to its purest form. But I do respect the process. It's supposed to go on for like 30 days and slowly dissipate.
I'll let my boss know.
What's that?
I'll let my boss know.
Yeah. Yeah.
30 days.
Be like, this is there's FMLA and then there's Shiva. And HR has to categorize them almost the same. Well, I'm glad that we're giggly, but I mean, yeah, it's a sad thing to see, you know, a family member pass, but she was, you know, 97, just not in her normal vibrant state and just really couldn't do anything or hang out with her friends. So I'm glad that, you know, now was the time for her to pass.
Yeah.
And not in pain and stuff. So that's good. Whew. Thanks so much for hanging out. I mean, I always ask you, like, I'm trying to find ways to manufacture like some sort of time to come to have a conversation. Yeah. So you're in Florida. For people that don't know, you're my sister. We can call you, you know, Lil Sis, L-I-L apostrophe Sis. I call you Kneezer because your first name is Abby. And that combined with Kneezer is, you know, Abby Kneezer. But you can go by whatever you want.
I have a question about the Lil. Isn't it L-I apostrophe L?
What are you shaving out? Like, what is the apostrophe standing for? Because there's no E, right? So you're not really... Right. It's not fully making little.
Right. I don't know.
Little contraction.
Up for debate.
Little ambiguous contraction. So you're in Florida and you got vaccinated. Well, I'm jealous of your governor. He's awesome.
Who isn't?
He looks like a large baby making infantile decisions. Anyways, So you're in Florida. The eye of the beast, the eye of the storm. The eye of the social storm.
Yeah.
But you're vaccinated, so you're immune to everything.
I'm not fully immune yet, so I will be shortly, a couple weeks.
Which one did you get? Which vaccine?
Moderna.
Moderna. So you have another one coming. And then after that, is there like another extension period where you have to like hold out hope that it's going to work? Or is it instantaneous when you get that second shot?
I think 2 weeks after is like full immunity.
Okay.
So.
Are you immediately going to go to a super spreader event and just kind of like flaunt your immunity?
I mean, I've been like, doing that the whole time.
Bitches, you can't touch me, motherfucker.
I have the reason all the variants are spreading throughout Florida. You're welcome.
It's like, remember those movies where somebody would have like diplomatic immunity? And they could just like kind of puff their chest out and be like, you can't do shit because I have diplomatic immunity. The same sort of bravado. You should have that viral immunity bravado.
I think so.
So what's exciting in Florida right now? So you guys, it's probably about to get hot as balls. Is that around the corner?
I mean, it's been kind of cool the past couple of days. I don't know why, but yeah, it'll be back to normal.
Okay, so hot as balls around the corner.
Hurricane season. I think they're moving it up this year from June. So it's just, they're like, you know what?
We need the ratings.
Better than May.
Yeah, yeah. Mother Nature needs the ratings. She needs the IG followers.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of a free for all here. Like, you do whatever you want. You ask somebody to wear a mask and
they spit in your face.
Right. Everybody has a gun. I mean, it's paradise, Margaritaville.
Oh, the prophet, Jimmy Buffett. I see that they're going to have at the end of this month, Dana White was boasting, a good buddy of your governor, I'm sure, by the way. Dana White was boasting in the UFC, they're going to have a fully packed event in Jacksonville, 50,000 capacity arena, fully packed UFC, bring back all the fans, super spreader. Let's do this.
Are you coming?
Well, I haven't got my vaccine yet. And I don't know that they would
in Florida.
Well, I don't know. They would allow me in if I had a vaccine passport. They'd be like, yeah, yeah. Why are you trying, sir? What's that?
Everybody's welcome. You don't need to be vaccinated.
It's just a viral whore. If you have viruses, we will accept you. No questions asked.
Yeah. Don't wear a mask, though, because you'll be ostracized.
Yeah. So I figured if I get my vaccine, then I probably wouldn't be allowed admission into the UFC event in Jacksonville. I would be shunned. You know, that's my biggest reservation. But I'd love to be immersed in I've never been to a super spreader. So, I mean, I could cross that off my bucket list because my bucket list would be much more prevalent at that point.
Yeah. Well, we have the Super Bowl, the Super Spreader Bowl. So
congrats by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, we have WrestleMania coming up next weekend in Tampa.
What is that going to be a full capacity event?
I think it's limited capacity, but still, you know, I mean, I've been to WrestleMania before and, you know, those are super cautious people. So I'm sure it'll be fully masked.
Right. The monster truck crowd does frequent the WWE events. Nothing against people that love big monster trucks, but I wouldn't say they're part of the super liberal, like over science sort of base, you know, maybe a little science deficient.
Yeah, slightly. I mean, there'll be masks, but like the Lucha Libre masks. That's about it.
I can't wait to come back to see my fam. As soon as I'm vaccinated, you will see my face again. But until then, I am petrified of where you live. Petrified.
I'm going to wear my mask forever. I mean, next time I see you, like pandemic or not, like mask and sunglasses is my new thing. Then you can't see my facial expression.
Well, I never really wanted to see most of your face anyways. I
mean, it's either resting bitch face or rolling my eyes or both. So yeah,
those should be kept under wraps. Yeah. I mean, for you, and you said it when we talked on the phone, the quarantine, the pandemic was a blessing. You were just, I mean, it played right into your hand. Yeah. You had a face card. You had a face card down and they threw you an ace. Boom. Blackjack.
Man, Shiva is awesome. I mean, you know, I don't want to say that's basically what my life is. I don't have to show my face half the time. I don't have to feign interest in people's conversations.
Yeah. Anything that takes any sort of social effort.
It really enables me and empowers me to be just an introverted bitch all the time.
Good, good. Yeah.
Finally.
Just Shiva, coulda, woulda.
So many Shiva puns.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I haven't seen you. This is the first time, like, I've seen you in a while. We usually do, like, text and phone conversations.
Yeah, I'm not super into this whole, you have to see my face. It used to be just phone conversations in general. Now it's like everything is a Zoom call and
you can't get out of it.
Is that necessary that you have to see my face?
Well, I used to get super petrified when somebody would try to FaceTime me. Like I would turn on my phone. I would like open up my phone and I would see that somebody had their face waiting for me to expose my face. And I would get, I mean, my anxiety would go through the roof, but now I'm like, oh, it's, you know, I guess I have to kind of adopt and adapt to the new climate, but nobody says I have to be happy about it.
No, sometimes I just turn off the camera and say it's not working.
No, I have one of those retro phones that doesn't have a camera. Can you like, I remember when I was dating in, 2001, that dates me, but dating in 2001, and I went up to a girl and I was, you know, I was talking to her and I was like, maybe I could get your phone number. And she looked me dead in the eye and she said, I don't have a cell phone and I'm never home. And she walked away. I was like, wow, man,
that's a baller move.
Baller. I mean, I respected her wholeheartedly for her position. But I was like, yeah, I was like, wow, first of all, that's completely untrue. But I mean, she said it with confidence, with no wavering. And so I just had to deal with it. But nowadays, there's no way. You can't say that with confidence these days.
I wish. I miss those days.
Just having an out. Be like, I'm inaccessible. I'm not accessible. Bye.
God. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, good times.
Good old days. Yeah. Remember when you had to like, you could write a phone number on your hand and then as soon as you sweat from social anxiety, it went away. Oh, the good old days. Oh, God. Well, I'm going to hit you up to do this more often. And I'm sure once the immense listening audience hears your voice and your sense of humor, they'll want you back. But I love you and I miss you.
Love you and I miss you too. All right.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
And now it's time for some education as my lovely wife, Jill, joins us to talk about mushrooms and health.
You want my wisdom?
Very wise woman.
Thank you, my lovely wife, for being back in the mustache room.
My lovely husband.
Yeah, well.
I mean, handsome husband.
Thank you very much. I mean, that's up for debate right now. It's been a grooming. It's a challenge grooming time for me right now.
Well, aren't you observing Shiva?
Yeah, there's some Shiva. There's some Shiva. Even though I just recently learned the ins and outs of Shiva. Yes, there's some Shiva.
I mean, that pizza was probably not a Shiva move.
No.
Because you were enjoying it.
I was indulging. Selective Shiva at this point. So, Jill, first of all, I want to say we are, what, almost 30 weeks. Is that tomorrow?
What is today's Monday? Wednesday. Wednesdays are like week anniversary.
Wednesday is 30 weeks, and we've been trying to play music and sing to the baby.
Yeah, we've got a nice lullaby that we sing them.
We
sing
do.
Her.
We do. We've been limited to songs about Mook at this point. For those of you that listen, you know that Mook is a frequent visitor on the podcast. Hopefully silent.
Unsolicited.
Yeah, unsolicited vocal contributor to the podcast.
Yes.
But he also, he'll sometimes stand on your chest and put this insane amount of weight in his front two paws.
Like a death
right,
touch.
Yeah, right on your sternum, right?
Yeah, and it's not even both. It could just be one where he has all feet on you, but like the one is just like the pressure and the weight that he can like emit.
Yeah.
Is insane. It's like an anvil.
Yeah, it's like an anvil. It's elephant-like the way he puts that much pressure.
And he knows like exactly the pressure point apparently that exists on your like breastbone and
anything that can inflict pain. Mook is savvy.
He knows it.
So we came up with a song. So we used the same kind of blues theme to all the songs about Mook. And so the most recent song, and this is our contribution to creating a creative Becker, one that's musically inclined, is Why Your Paws So Heavy, Anvil Paw Mook.
Why's your paws so heavy?
Your paws are as heavy as anvils. Anvil Paw Mook. Why your paws so heavy, Mook? Anvil Paw Mook.
And then that was a spinoff from Puffy Tail Mook.
Puffy Tail Mook. Dirty Butt Mook.
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
why's
I do
your
more.
Butt so dirty?
I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
And then why is your tail so puffy?
Why is your tail so puffy?
Puffy tail Mook.
Oh, Mook. So Mook provides little in the way of friendship or empathy, but a lot in the way of songs, unknowingly.
Yeah. So these are Becker's first songs.
She's going to come out singing like a blues musician.
Yeah, maybe she'll be a blues singer.
Hey, I'm not opposed to that.
No, me neither.
All right, back to business. What mushroom are we talking about today, and how can we benefit from its consumption?
We are going to talk about the Mashima mushroom.
Ooh.
Welcome to Mashima.
Mashima.
So this is a mushroom. It grows on like bark, it grows off the side of trees, and it's almost like a protrusion of the tree that resembles like a black horse hoof.
Okay.
So it doesn't look like spongy or delicate. It looks like it could take some force to it.
And
so
like a piece of pavement.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not a piece of pavement, but okay. It looks like a piece of wood that's just kind of jutted out.
So don't judge this book by its cover, essentially.
Yeah, it's really interesting looking. I would imagine it's very tough. So it's not going to be something that you're going to consume raw or like saute in a stir fry.
No sautéed bark.
Yeah, I mean, unless that's awful. What you're going for. But yeah, so the Mashima, it actually also goes by black hoof because it resembles it so much. So it could be black or brown growing on mulberry trees.
Ooh.
So, you know, the mulberry, that's another nursery rhyme down Mulberry Lane or something.
Around the mulberry tree?
Or the mulberry bush?
Mulberry bush, I think you're
right.
One
of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a staple in traditional Chinese medicine, as is much of, you know, all the other mushrooms that we outline.
Yeah, Eastern medicine.
Some of the benefits include treating of digestive problems. So if you have an upset stomach, like diarrhea, you know, nausea, heartburn, indigestion.
Diarrhea.
Why do they make that so fancy?
Oh, Pepto. There's more for you, Becker.
Yeah, so yeah, so a substitute for Pepto-Bismol could be some Mashima mushroom extract.
Very nice.
So that is something that is used quite often in the Eastern cultures. Additionally, it's a huge benefit with anti-inflammatories. It can help with eczema and skin conditions.
Nice.
So that's something where they'll take some of the extracts and you can put, they're in, either in oils or lotions, and you could apply it to your skin as a natural remedy to Very treat cool. that. Same thing with chronic inflammation. It's like you have, I don't know if you're, you know, what is that, like when your bones hurt or just like...
Yeah, well, it could be based on the weather. It could be based on, you know, yeah. the geography.
Yeah, so anti-inflammatory properties, like I had said, you know, with conditions with heart disease, diabetes, allergies, or arthritis. It does support the immune system. It's got the polyphenols, beta-glucans, and intense antioxidant effects. So it's an excellent choice for boosting your immune response.
Now, you had mentioned earlier when we were talking about it that it has some female-specific qualities.
Yeah, so I was doing some research, and I found that as far as cancer goes, treating breast cancer, for some reason, it's highly effective in supporting women's health, supporting healthy breast tissue,
awesome.
And fighting against breast cancer.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the fact, too, we were talking about mushroom blends and how we've had different blends of various medicinal mushrooms, and mm-hmm. it seems like the same mushrooms keep popping up, like reishi and turkey tail and lion's mane, and this one seems to be in the mix as well. They all have very yeah. similar qualities and play nicely together. That's
yeah,
very, very
chaga. Yeah, all of those, you know, multifaceted mushroom drinks, mushroom coffees, tinctures,
yeah,
all of that, they really do support one another, and they work together versus against.
Very cool. So how, other than the topical option, do people normally consume it in like pill form, or did it mention mm-hmm. any other options?
Yeah, so I have seen where you can buy them in capsules. Amazon offers them. So yeah, that could be, you know, another way to ingest your Mishima mushrooms.
Nice, nice. Well, we're going to keep this short, but I found that very informative.
Yeah,
and
did you? Good.
Yes, thank you so much for being here. We'll pick another great topic for the next time, but until then, stay well.
Awesome, you too. Walk with me, baby, come on and talk with me, come on and take me downtown. Girl, walk with me, baby, come on and talk with me, come on and take me downtown. Girl, walk with me, baby, talk with me, take me downtown. Girl, walk with me, walk.